It is Wednesday, October 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Doctors Without Borders seeks an independent investigation into the bombing of its hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan. We get the perspective of one analyst.
Hard to justify it as a war crime, I think. I'm not a lawyer, but I think the lawyers would be able to argue that this is a war zone and that they were, to some extent or another anyway, defending them and their interests.
U.S. President Barack Obama begins promoting the controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership Pact, and a new film explores the downfall of a prominent American news anchor. It's all ahead. International medical charity Doctors Without Borders Wednesday called for an independent panel to conduct an investigation under the Geneva Convention after Saturday's bombing of a hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan by U.S. forces. Médecins Sans Frontières International President Joanne Liu told reporters it is unacceptable to characterize the bombing of the hospital and killing of staff and patients as collateral damage. Liu said the facts of the attacks need to be investigated impartially and independently, and that MSF cannot rely on the internal probes promised by the U.S., Afghanistan, and NATO. Meanwhile, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan acknowledged Tuesday responsibility for Saturday's deadly airstrike, which killed 22 people. Army General John Campbell's statement to U.S. lawmakers comes as the debate over how many U.S. troops to leave in the country after 2016 intensifies. Here's an excerpt of Campbell's testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee.
The decision to provide aerial fires was a U.S. decision made within the U.S. chain of command. A hospital was mistakenly struck. We would never intentionally target a protected medical facility. I must allow the investigation to take its course, and therefore I'm not at liberty to discuss further specifics at this time. However, I assure you that the investigation will be thorough, objective, and transparent. With still many weeks left in the traditional fighting season, intense combat continues in many parts of the country. The Afghan security forces have been severely tested this year. In the wake of the coalition's redeployment, the Afghan security forces and insurgents both accepted that this fighting season would be decisive. Pakistan military operations this year have also displaced foreign fighters into eastern and northern Afghanistan. The emergence of Daesh, or the Islamic State, Khorasan Province, ISKP, has further complicated the theater landscape. Most recently, the Taliban increased the tempo of their operations following the announced death of their spiritual leader, Mullah Omar. President Ghani has asked NATO and the U.S. to provide some flexibility in our planning to account for the fact that his government remains in transition while the threats he's facing are changing. I've offered my chain of command several options for our future laydown in 2016 and beyond.
General John Campbell. Also Tuesday, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the future U.S. troop presence in Afghanistan will depend on a variety of factors, including conditions on the ground, the progress made in security in the country, and the threats that remain. He said the president would also hear from his diplomatic team and the intelligence community, as well as the Pentagon civilian leadership, as he makes his decision. Christopher Sneddon, a professor at the Hawaii-based Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty it's quite possible Mr. Obama will keep U.S. troop levels above the envisioned 1,000 at the end of 2016.
Now, there's supposedly still about 13,000 foreign troops in Afghanistan from roughly 40-odd nations in this Resolute Support mission, which has taken over from the International Security Assistance Force. And President Obama is contemplating keeping more Americans or perhaps even increasing that number. So that is a reflection of the instability that's currently in Afghanistan.
Doctors Without Borders is calling the attack on its hospital a war crime. Is that going to pose a problem for the U.S.?
Yes, it will be a challenge, I think, in terms of their relationship with Doctors Without Frontiers, that's for sure. Hard to justify it as a war crime, I think. I'm not a lawyer, but I think the lawyers would be able to argue that this is a war zone and that they were, to some extent or another anyway, defending them and their interests.
Christopher, the situation in Kunduz, the fact that the Taliban was able to occupy that northeast city for a period of days, points up the real security problems that the Afghan National Forces face.
They do. It's a big job, and Afghanistan is incredibly unstable. And there's a lot of politics as well. Dr. Ghani and Dr. Abdullah aren't necessarily pulling together at the same time in the same way. There is a bright spot, though. The Afghan economy apparently is growing at about 3.1%, which is better than previous years, and suggests that maybe they're getting one or two things right. But there's some serious unrest there. The Taliban has finally resolved its leadership issues, with the death of Mullah Omar finally being acknowledged, and Mullah Mansour now apparently in charge. They're a bit more unified, and that's going to only create further problems. There's some serious, what we call warlords, or people with local power, who are sitting on the fence waiting to see which way the wind blows. But there's a lot of political instability in that nation.
How likely do you think it is that the U.S. will have to have a residual force larger than the planned 1,000 by the end of 2016?
It depends how serious they are about allowing the Afghan National Army to defend the nation, keeping Dr. Ghani and his colleagues in power, and also ensuring that the Taliban doesn't get a hold. If they want to do one or both or all of those three things, then they're going to have some forces there, because the Afghan National Army is an army. It doesn't have any air power. It has limited air power. It has limited abilities to maintain the equipment that it's already been given or that's been left behind by ISAF. So it does need foreign assistance to do some of those basic sort of counter-terrorist type operations. That's not to say that they're not brave and they're not skilled, but they do need that external support, particularly in terms of things like bringing in airstrikes, and it's really only the foreign forces that can provide that. So you need a certain number of people both to offer that assistance and to protect yourself. So perhaps they're going to need more U.S. forces there.
That's Christopher Sneddon of the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies. The Washington Post says the Obama administration is studying plans to maintain up to 5,000 troops into 2017, while it says General Campbell has offered several options to the White House that could result in a residual force of 7,000 beyond 2016. And now for a reaction on social media to the events involving Kunduz, Afghanistan. I'm joined now by Olin Akishalu. Olin, so what is the reaction on social media to this?
So when the news of the bombing first spread over the weekend, there was obviously a tremendous response on social media. But by the time General Campbell testified yesterday, that had already started to die down a little bit. Overall, I'd say the reaction is getting a little bit more mixed.
What are people saying?
Well, a lot of people are still angry about the bombing. MSF is still being very critical on Facebook and Twitter. They're calling for a full independent investigation. A lot of Americans are also going online to apologize for their country. But there is also a growing number of people who are saying that, given how violent the fighting has been in areas like Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria, if you're an aid worker in these countries, you can't really expect to be safe. Some people are also questioning what an investigation could achieve. I think it'll be really interesting to see how persistent MSF continues to be in seeking their investigation, because right now they're a big driver of the conversation on social media. Now, to segue into another bit of social media news, yesterday Twitter launched a new feature called Moments. This feature is interesting because what it does is it pulls together pieces of content on topics that a lot of users are tweeting about and puts them into a moment that users can browse through and see all together. So it includes plain text tweets, GIFs, photos, even a few selfies on a pretty broad range of topics.
What are they hoping to get out of this new feature?
Well, Twitter has a pretty big audience, over 300 million users, but its growth has slowed down in the past few years. A little over a month ago, Facebook actually passed the landmark of having more than a billion people online in a single day, and that's put a little more pressure on Twitter to keep attracting new people. On Monday, Twitter also announced it was appointing a new CEO, Jack Dorsey. So this is part of a larger move that they'll be making to stay relevant and keep attracting people.
Thanks very much, Olin. That's Olin Akishalu. In other news, U.S. President Barack Obama promoted the Trans-Pacific Partnership on Tuesday, one day after 12 Pacific Rim nations reached the free trade deal in Atlanta. The controversial pact that would involve about 40% of global trade still needs approval by lawmakers in respective countries. Zlata Sahok reports Obama is facing strong opposition to the deal, including from members of his own party.
After more than 5 years of intensive negotiations, the United States and 11 other countries reached agreement Monday to remove or ease the barriers to mutual trading. Supporters, including President Obama, claim the deal will spur economic growth, foster development, and promote innovation across the Asia-Pacific region.
This agreement makes us more competitive by eliminating about 18,000 taxes, tariffs, that are placed on America's products in these other countries.
But many legislators on either side of the aisle are not convinced. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who is running for the Democratic presidential nomination, told supporters in Washington that previous free trade deals failed to live up to expectations.
The history of trade agreements in this country has been a disaster for American workers. We have lost millions of decent paying jobs. It has taken us in a race to the bottom. And I'm tired, frankly, of seeing American workers having to compete against people in low-wage countries all over the world who are making pennies an hour. That has got to change.
Experts say the Trans-Pacific trade deal is bound to hurt some industries, at least initially, but will be good for the global economy overall.
Some of the winners clearly are high technology industries. You look at semiconductors, computers, there are really some breakthrough provisions having to do with free flow of data and preventing countries from requiring local storage of data, which is a big issue for the Googles of the world.
The trade partnership that includes almost half of the world's population is expected to undermine China, which has not joined. A Chinese economic expert said the accord will not have a major impact on the country's foreign trade.
China has signed bilateral free trade agreements with two-thirds of the TPP members. It can balance the negative effect of the TPP agreement to a degree.
China is the world's second largest economy. Zlatica Hoch, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Research shows that almost two-thirds of American teenagers use text messaging to communicate with each other daily. Now, a new study published by the American Psychological Association suggests that girls between 13 and 16 years old who impulsively text tend to perform more poorly academically than teen boys. The study's subjects were about 400 predominantly white teens in 8th and 11th grades from a small town in the Midwestern United States. Subjects filled out a two-part questionnaire. The first part dealt with aspects of their texting activity, and the second asked about their academic performance and how well-adjusted they were in school. The researchers found that the academic performance of only the female subjects was negatively affected by the amount of time they spent texting. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new film explores why a prominent American television anchor lost his job. Officials in Thailand are warning smoke pollution from Indonesia's massive forest fires is affecting public health in four southern provinces. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok about the widening problem in the region.
Indonesian farmers and developers routinely burn rainforest to clear land at this time of year, but a large rise in palm oil production on peatlands is blamed for massive fires with thick black smoke that easily drifts across borders. That has led to poor air quality and cancellations of classes, sporting events, and other public activities in five countries. University of Malaya Asia Europe Institute Deputy Executive Director Helena Varki says Indonesian, Malaysian, and Singaporean investors and companies have close links with politicians and officials in Indonesia who are supposed to be mitigating the problem, creating a conflict of interest.
Once they retire from the government, they are re-employed in these companies as advisors and as other positions to maintain this relationship with the present government.
The Association of Southeast Asian Nations has an agreement on transboundary haze pollution, but it has no dispute settlement, enforcement, or punishment mechanisms. Environmental organizations such as the Worldwide Fund for Nature are advocating sustainable lending practices for commercial logging, palm oil, and pulp production, something Singapore's powerful banks are examining. The WWF says only four major banks in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore take environmental factors into consideration for credit decisions. WWF Asia Finance and Commodities Specialist Jeannie Stamp contends cutting capital available to polluters could have more impact than pursuits by law enforcement.
Currently, the threat of being prosecuted depends on whether there is an adequate police force in the region, investigations, whereas if upfront, if their lenders and investors are starting to ask them about their practices and requiring them to make certain commitments, then it's very hard for them to escape effectively or to continue going under the radar.
In Pekanbaru on Sumatra, the haze is so bad, some babies have been moved to the air-conditioned governor's office. One mother, Nur Habiba Al-Ashraf, says the government office is safe and clean, unlike outside. Her child, she adds, has stopped coughing since he was brought inside the building. The haze is not only affecting humans. At an orangutan rescue center in Indonesian Borneo, 16 orangutan babies have been diagnosed with acute respiratory infections. The center's program manager is Denny Kurniawan. He says he is worried that if the conditions persist, a lot more orangutans could become sick and some could die. Attempts to extinguish the estimated 1,800 hotspots in Indonesia are being hampered by a lack of equipment and water. Indonesian officials, such as the country's disaster management agency chief, express frustration amid accusations they are not adequately trying to tackle the problem. Willem Rapangele says if other countries feel they are affected by the haze, Indonesia's people are suffering more, and it is not correct to say Indonesia is not doing anything. As the fires continue to burn, money is going up in smoke. Commercial losses in the region are expected to surpass the $9 billion from the rainforest fires in 1997 and 98. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. A well-known former American television news anchorman is the subject of a new movie. Oscar winners Robert Redford and Cate Blanchett explore the controversial events surrounding the downfall of former CBS News anchor Dan Rather in a new film called Truth. International Edition's David Byrd has details.
The year is 2004, and George W. Bush is running for re-election. Then CBS News anchor Dan Rather and producer Mary Mapes broadcast what became a highly controversial report that said the former president had used his father's political influence to escape service in Vietnam. The movie is based on Mapes's autobiographical book, Truth and Duty, The Press, The President, and The Privilege of Power. The controversy over the so-called Killian documents, documents which criticized Mr. Bush's service in the Texas Air National Guard instead of going to Vietnam, is the center of the film. It was learned later that CBS had not authenticated the documents, which were supposedly from Bush's commanding officer, the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. The network eventually repudiated the documents and its reporting and issued a public apology. Both Mapes and Rather lost their jobs, along with several executives at the network. At the Los Angeles premiere of the film, Kate Blanchett, who plays Mary Mapes in the movie, said that truth presents the facts without spin or revision.
And I think the film is like a glass of water. It just it presents the events as they happened and then throws it back to the audience to say, well, how do you feel about corporate media ownership and in its proximity to politics? And I think it transcends cultures. Yes, it's very particularly about American politics and American media ownership, but that those questions are relevant whether you live in Europe or Australasia or the States.
Robert Redford plays Dan Rather in the film. Redford did not attend the L.A. premiere, but Kate Blanchett says that working with him was something she had wanted to do for a long time.
To work opposite him, I mean, he's so disarmingly frank and present and engaged, and he asks really dangerous questions, I think, both politically, culturally, socially, but as an actor, he puts people at ease, but also keeps them on their toes, and that's a very rare sort of quality to get to the chance to act opposite, so I relished every second.
The film marks the directorial debut for James Vanderbilt, better known for his writing and producing of The Amazing Spider-Man, Zodiac, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Vanderbilt says he revels in the kind of story that gives viewers an insider's take on events.
And I love movies where you can kind of go behind the curtain and sort of see how things are done and how things are made. And so I love the idea of doing that with television news. And this seemed to be the perfect story to do that with because there were so many facets of what happened. And then being able to do it with somebody like Kate and see it through her eyes, see it through Mary Mapes' eyes, was really exciting to me.
Truth also stars Stacy Keach as Lieutenant Colonel Bill Burkett, who turned over the Killian documents to CBS. Elizabeth Moss stars as producer Lucy Scott, and Dennis Quaid plays Colonel Roger Charles, who worked with Mary Mapes when she broke the story of prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Topher Grace plays researcher Mike Smith, and John Benjamin Hickey stars as Mark Rolstad, Mapes' husband. Truth was shown at this year's Toronto Film Festival and makes its U.S. debut October 16th. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Well, that music means it's time for the end of our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Sarah Williams.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the dual explosions in the Yanya and Kuji areas of Abuja on October 2nd, and the suicide bombings and militant attacks in Maiduguri and Adamawa on October 1st. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of those killed and injured. These tragic events are stark reminders that violent extremists will stop at nothing to inflict horrific and indiscriminate harm upon innocent civilians. In particular, Boko Haram's reign of terror and sheer brutality have left thousands dead and millions displaced. To assist those nations threatened by Boko Haram, President Barack Obama recently delegated authority to the Secretary of State to direct the drawdown of up to $45 million in defense articles and services, as well as military education and training to support Benin, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria's efforts to defeat Boko Haram. This will enable the Secretary to authorize the provision of critical airlift support and other assistance, including to help the Lake Chad Basin countries move troops and equipment to the border region from which Boko Haram terrorists continue to launch brutal attacks on civilians. This assistance builds on training, equipment, and logistical support that the United States is providing using other authorities. The United States also continues to provide advisors and share information with our regional partners to enhance counter-Boko Haram operations, as well as victim support and counter-violent extremism programming. Since 2009, Boko Haram has killed more than 10,000 people, devastated communities, and left deep scars in the lives of those affected by its violence. Boko Haram's indiscriminate violence has created more than 2 million internally displaced persons and over 200,000 refugees throughout the Lake Chad Basin region. Defeating Boko Haram will require a holistic campaign that protects human rights, pairs progress on development and governance with security measures, and fills in behind military successes with civilian stabilization efforts. The United States stands with our partners in the region who are fighting to end Boko Haram's campaign of terror that threatens to rob an entire generation of the benefits of unfettered access to education, health care, and economic development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.